This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is an edited recording of the panel discussion that was held at the BFM Health and Living Live 2016 event on April 2nd. BFM Health and Living Live 2016 is presented by AIA, the real life company.
My partners in crime, ladies and gentlemen. If you follow the radio show, you know what I mean. Okay, we're going to conclude with this session. Aging eggs and a sperm count crisis. Why is that? Let's face facts. All of us are having our children older in life. Doctors will tell you, have your babies young, but most of us are not. So what is the solution? These people are going to help us understand. To start with, what is it about fertility, George, that men don't quite understand?
Well, men seem to think that fertility is a God's given gift. That's it, you know.
So typical. So,
that's right, so, so typical, like everything else,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
And then, so when they actually faced with problems, obviously it takes two to tangle. Whenever there's a problem, they probably will hide their heads under the sand like an ostrich and then say, look, this is a woman's problem. But times change. I think your program makes times change.
It has.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. You know, before we carry on a little bit further, earlier on I was interviewed to ask me, what does BFN stand for? I say BFN stands for Bravo for Mirror. Come on, guys.
What about all of you who ditched your patients and came here this afternoon?
Did you see how I avoided the question there?
Yes, typical.
Okay, yeah. Yes. Pramitha, I think you should take over now.
Okay, you said something interesting, that in the past it was always a woman's problem when it came to infertility, Dr. Pramitha. That's no longer the case. I think it almost rests 50-50 now. Yep. Am I correct?
Yes, it does. Definitely, we could call it the law of thirds or so. One-third women's problems, one-third men's problem, and one-third probably a mixed problem, along with unexplained cases. And I'd like to go back to George's answer just now and say that a lot of men up to today, unfortunately, still feel it's purely a woman's problem, and that's really very sad. Up till today, you know, I get girls coming in on their own and saying, my husband doesn't want to come in. They've sent me first for that initial checkup, and I think that we need to change along the way.
What do you do to them when the woman comes in?
I need to send them to you either.
All
I
right.
can send them.
You know, Dr. Prashant, when you first came and did your first show with me, I asked you, when should people come forward and see a fertility specialist? And you had an interesting take on it. People come in thinking immediately that they need IVF, but that may not be the case. It may be as simple as
have sex more.
Yeah. And at the right time.
And vary your position, as we found out in the earlier times. Well, I mean, you come in when you're upset. When you come in when you think there's a problem. Dr. Pramitha, George, myself, we're there just to make sure that there isn't a problem. And the majority of people who walk in the clinic just need to make sure and do the tests and just be assured that there's nothing going on, and with time they'll get pregnant. Of course, what we also do is we do pick up those who have a problem and then need to move a little bit forward. And there are multiple things that can be done. IVF is really the tip of the pyramid. But I just want to go back to the earlier comments that both George and Pramitha mentioned, which is, why do men not come to see a specialist? Because they've got another specialist at home, which is their mother. And the mother would have said to them that it's not your fault, because I brought you up well and I gave you black chicken soup in the morning, which is double boiled, and so it must be her. She's not taking enough dong guai, send her to see the doctor.
And not just Indian mothers, there are Chinese mothers as well, right?
Who said anything about the Indian mother?
Right.
I didn't say anything about Indian mother. I've always wondered why. Okay, there's a sperm count crisis. Some research shows that there's a 50% drop in the number of sperm men have around the world. Is there a reason for that?
This actually dates from 1930. So if you look at it, it's frightening. And nobody actually realized there was a problem till about 1990, when a Danish chap first brought it up. Because in Denmark in the 30s, they had conscription. They had national service for young boys. And as part of the blood pressure, weight stuff, they checked the sperm count, just in case you got poisoned during the war. And they have data from 1930 going down to 1990, and they published this. And the States people have shown the same thing. So you see it coming down up to 1990, and people say it's about 1% a year. That's the next one. from France, because in France, IVF is free. Fertility treatment is free. So they have data for men who walked in the door just to do sperm tests. So that's looking at about 40,000 patients over that period of time. And you see that drop from 89 onwards in a 15-year period. So that's now saying it's about 2% a year. And that's not the end of it. The worst thing is that there is an increase of abnormal sperm. So we're making less sperm, and what we're making is increasingly abnormal. And those two things together are going to begin to collide at some point, and you're going to see an explosion of male fertility. So I don't know what the specialists at home are going to say about this, because it's going to be predominantly a male problem going forward.
See, Mira, it's so unfair, isn't it? So unfair for men.
I can never understand why do you need, why, Dr. Premita, why do we need so many sperm to just fertilize one egg?
Exactly. Don't you think?
Why?
That super sperm.
The creme de la creme.
The creme. Yes, that's right. You know, I think George should be able to answer that because the sperms are his field. But I think what is important... No, I'm not letting you
answer. The sperm hunter.
The thing I think we need to know is the fact that we have sperms, we have eggs. I mean, I just like to go back to the fact that... Prashant, correct me if I'm wrong, but we don't need every person to have an absolute correct sperm count. I mean, they can have even a low sperm count and they still can get a woman pregnant, to be fair, to a man who has a bad sperm count as such. You just need that one super sperm to get
you just have to think of like
pregnant.
Government expenditure. There's a lot of leakages.
Trust George to come up with that. Can I just go back to the
slide? Oh, come on. That was pretty good, right?
I'm always surprised why it's not called the George D. Show.
I know.
Really, honestly. Can I just go back to the slide and answer that question as to why you need so many sperm? The egg is like a golf ball. It's got a very, very hard outer shell. So what you see there is a picture of an egg surrounded by millions and millions of sperm, and all the sperm have a little bit of a chemical at the end of it, and that chemical slowly eats away that golf ball until one of them enters, and then Great Wall of China comes back up again. So you need that, and you need those millions.
Where do all of you stand when it comes to complementary medicine? When it comes to the Dong Quai you said just now?
Well, George, it doesn't have to be Dong Quai. I mean, I think complementary medicine helps calm the woman or the man. And being more relaxed and being more into yourself and just being, you know, zen helps stabilize a woman's hormones, makes her feel good. The quality of eggs that come out that cycle might be much better. I mean, it's just like telling a couple who's trying to get pregnant, go for a holiday. Just, you know, go at that particular time when you're ovulating, just go for a holiday, go for a nice beach holiday. Don't think about anything. Have enough sex as you can, you know, lots and lots of sex. And for all you
what
know...
What is lots and lots of sex, by the way?
Your definition and my definition might vary.
I want to know who has more
I think
sex, you know.
We all want to go on holiday with her.
That's it, okay. Coates, how much sex is lots and lots of sex?
And you may come back pregnant. It's just like, I'll tell you stories of how many patients whom, you know, have come to see me for fertility, and I've said, look, just calm down, but go and visit Prashant. And a good number of them actually come back pregnant because they had more sperm there.
Go and visit Prashant and they come back pregnant?
Not what you think. Not what you think.
I'm sure there are laws against that, right? Oh, dear.
The hand, it's the hand blessed.
Luckily, you didn't ask them to come and see me.
But sometimes, George, it's just a simple thing. As you said, the guys don't want to come forward, Dr. Premita. But if they do come forward, George, sometimes it's just a very simple problem. And people don't realize that.
Right, okay. I mean, when they come to see me, I mean, like you said, majority of them, we have so many sperms, right, in there. And the vast majority of them actually needs a bit of advice about when is the right time to have sex, you know, because you have no idea how scared men can be, you know, whenever they're faced with problems like that, they don't talk to anyone, and then they just assume that, you know, you're supposed to just get on and do it, right? Because that's a culture that you expect. And the other thing which not many people realize that what you did in your past may come back to haunt you, such as if you have been naughty and then get all sorts of diseases in the past, and that might block the sperm ducts. And that's when we come in to actually retrieve those sperms, harvest those sperms for you, and actually help you with, you know, fertility work. And lastly, some people are just born genetically to have obstructed sperm duct. There's a condition called congenital bilateral aplasia of vas deferens. And for many, many years, many people assume that it's so rare that it doesn't exist. And increasingly, we're seeing more and more of these men. And then there are simple technology that can overcome such obstacles.
George, I think you're just drumming up business here. Like, what you need to tell them is stop smoking, stop drinking,
yeah,
and lose some weight. Actually, did you see yesterday's star? There are more obese people in the world than slim people in the world. We're heading in that direction. You see, a man's testicles hang outside the body because he produces about 60 to 80 million sperm a day. That's normal. That's, if you had a factory that produced 60 million TVs a day, it would be an enormously hot factory. And so you need to hang them out. Now, that is because if you get fat, imagine in that man where his testicles are going to be. You're not even going to be able to see them. They're completely surrounded by fat. The heat is not being dissipated, and that's one of the biggest causes of that dropping sperm count that you see is sedentary jobs, big fat men sitting on chairs for 8 or 12 hours, and then sperm count drops. So losing weight, reducing smoking, and reducing alcohol.
Some women, Dr. Premitha, want to lose weight. And they do vigorous exercise. And that's not the best thing either, is it?
Yeah, I think this, you can't do too much because of the fact that, you have to sort of maintain an ideal BMI. An ideal BMI, your hormones are working perfectly. When you lose too much of weight or you do too much of exercise, what happens is your whole endocrine system goes a bit crazy. And so even though you might be feeling really good and very, very fit, but your whole system is not working. So that's why you have athletes who really do in a lot of exercises and they're really, really fit, but they don't get their periods very regularly. So they don't ovulate. And you need to ovulate to get pregnant.
Can we go through the statistics of how fertility drops after the age of 35?
So there we are. Look at your age. So if you're 25 and you've been trying for 12 months, in the next month, your chance of getting pregnant is 10%, which is not bad. This is per month. If you're 40, it's 3%. And if you've been trying for 2 years, which really isn't a long time, then you're 40, your chance is only 1% a month. So it drops drastically. And you can see the difference as you age.
But that's the single most important prognostic factor, isn't it? Because men's age doesn't come into this, right?
No.
Yeah, it's number of counts. So in some ways, that makes a men's job quite easy once we establish
always
that
men's job
is easy.
But okay, so that's not the case anymore. All of us are having our children older in life.
Mm.
So where do we go from here?
Great question.
We're waiting for stem cells.
No, I think it's
stem cells have a long way to go.
They do have a long way to go.
We have to look after ourselves, I think. I think the key message to the younger women who are going to plan their family later in life is to basically look after themselves, keep their weight healthy, exercise. I know we talked about nutrition and things like that. Go for regular checkups. If there's any problems, pick it up early. You sort it out early, rather than leaving it till when you really want to have a child. Half an hour at a doctor's appointment, getting a pap smear, getting an ultrasound, making sure that no fibroids or cysts. All these things are showing that you are being proactive to looking after yourself so that one day when you are ready to have a child, the chances are probably better for you at that point, rather than just letting things go and just leaving things to chance. Girls are smoking these days, and I think that's one big deterrent because smoking actually makes your eggs grow so much older. It's not so much the alcohol, it's the smoking. And I think women should be told that with smoking, your eggs grow older tremendously. It brings forth your menopause age by about 3 years. And all that's not really very good news.
So does that mean your data there is an assumption that everybody is healthy and hence the percentage of fertility drops? And so it's probably even less now if we don't live a healthy lifestyle?
Absolutely. I think it is an aging thing. Age, lifestyle are the two key issues. And stress. There's very clear data that if you go on holiday, as Premitha said, you're going to likely to get pregnant. And if you stay at work and you're a lawyer or a banker and come home at 10 o'clock, you ain't going to get pregnant. Stress reduces your desire for sex, your libido. The last thing you want to do after spending time in the office on the road, coming home and having a meal, is have sex. You just want to have a shower and go to bed. Right? Okay.
Speaks for yourself.
Well, you know, I know you're like a rubber band, George.
No. Then you postpone the sex to the weekend.
Is that right?
And you ovulated on Wednesday and your egg died on Thursday. Yes, exactly. It does.
So you miss that window of opportunity.
Then you have to wait for next month.
Yes. And then if you do falls the same on the weekend.
Sorry, okay. No, look. Okay, we've got a really healthy, you know, health-conscious crowd here. Many people who probably attend this have tried stop smoking, you know, been on holidays, a lot of sex, defined by Dr. Pramita, right, okay? And then, but yet, the baby's still not there. Mm. So what do you guys advise then?
Unexplained infertility, that's precisely.
Which is quite a large number of people who have that condition, right, okay? You know, personally, I think there's some sort of conspiracy here, right, okay? So, you know, so sperm counts keep dropping. Somebody's trying to kill us off here. Okay. So what do you do then? You know, you're really relaxing, you quit your job as a lawyer and a banker.
Yeah.
Right, okay, and
which,
then you're not stressed.
Which some people have done.
Yeah, you know, which, you know, and sadly, you know, that barrier, overcome that barrier for IVF, it's always difficult. But before IVF, is there anything else can be done? And of course, these days, we want to be devil's advocates to get into the controversial area about freezing their eggs, freezing the sperms and that sort of thing.
In a bit.
What's your view on that?
You thought very controversial areas. I mean, I don't think we should be talking about egg freezing here.
Right.
It's a good thing to do. Just a one-liner on egg freezing. If you don't have a partner and you're going beyond 35 and you don't think you're going to find a partner for the next 4 or 5 years, come and freeze your eggs. Nothing wrong with that. But unexplained infertility, in general, has an explanation. Dr. Pramita says a lot of people get told, go and see Dr. Prashant, and they get pregnant even when they come and see me. That's because when they come in, I don't tell them you need IVF. Very often I just go through their lifestyle or tell them, don't worry, you'll be pregnant. There's, you know, you are fertile. You just need to, and the stress reduction helps a lot. So a lot of it is just anxiety.
Mm.
Women get very, very anxious about the fact that time is running on and they're not getting pregnant, and just that. So lifestyle is actually a huge thing.
Indeed.
At the end of the day, if everything doesn't work, sure, there are treatments. I'm not going to go into that. That's very technical. Everybody who comes in the door is assessed, and then depending on your problems, then the treatment is recommended.
Okay.
There are things that can be done. And I work in a clinic which is part of a very large Australian group of IVF clinics. And there was a time in the history of Australia when you could have as many IVFs as you wanted, free. Not anymore, but you could. And in the state of South Australia, there was only one clinic, and that was in Adelaide. So they had massive data for everybody who had IVF in that state. And if you see there, going back 10 years ago, if you had 4 IVFs, the chance that you would have a baby, and this is every patient who walked in the door, okay, some of these are above 40, was 80%. If you cut that down to under 40, it's well over 90%. So things do work, and that's what I tell people who come in the door. Don't panic, just we'll get there. We'll do it step by step. And very often, just that stress reduction is enough for them.
Okay. I'm going to open up the floor for questions. Anyone want to ask a question?
Hello. Yeah, I'd like to ask, does the color of the sperm affect the quality of the sperm penetrating the egg?
What color are you talking about?
It has color?
Green,
no,
green is bad.
Green,
yeah.
I think green is very bad. Okay, right.
And also, other questions. Is there any data to prove that the Viagra, the blue pill, or Tonka Ali, or the Korean ginseng, increase the sperm, you know, along the way?
Okay,
right.
George.
Okay, right, okay. Actually, apart from green and red, okay, and then the rest of the colour, I mean, there's a lot of studies to look at consistency, amount, and that sort of thing. And actually, there's no influence of the sperm quality, because majority of the liquid in the semen actually comes from the prostate, 90%. That's why men who have vasectomy actually will ejaculate normally, even though there's no sperm in there. So there's no way to predict that. So the color itself, it's not really a determinant of your quality of your actual fertility of your sperms. The second question, you mentioned quite a few supplement or, you know, food stuff. If you talk about the blue pill, and actually the only effect the blue pill has is to perfuse the sexual organ, the penis. and then it will have no impact on fertility. In fact, when the pill came out, there was a significant amount of anxiety that for men who take this regularly, it actually can cause the scarring of the sperm-producing cells in the testicle. But later on, that was proven wrong. So there is no influence, even though it helps with erections. There are short-term studies looking at something like ginseng, and then also asparagus and, you know, various things. Tonka Ali, I'm not sure. It's been mainly for erectile dysfunction. And looking at short-term, whether it changes the sperm count or not. Those studies are very short interval studies, so it's difficult to draw any conclusion. The real issues about doing sperm count study is that the sperm count varies quite significantly, you know, throughout the day and number of ejaculation you have. So some of them show that there are improvement, for example, ginseng, especially in studies from South Korea. However, you know, a lot of the time, some of these may be due to whenever the patients are taking those supplements, they are actively conscious to be more healthy in their lifestyle, stop smoking, exercise more. So there are some sort of placebo effects as well. So I hope that answers your question. Thank you very much for the question.
He just said it doesn't work, la.
Yes.
That's what he said. Ayo.
But he's not wearing any underwear either, so that compensates.
After all that, right, okay. Next time I'll just say no.
Just one question. Now, you said for women, it's just a stress management. Okay. How about for men? Is it the low quality of quantity of sperm count? Is it possible of environmental pollution due to, like, for example, like, you know, using a plastic ware with the leaching of bisphenol?
Using plastic bag ware?
Plastic ware. Tupperware, all these things.
Oh, all right. Okay.
All
right.
Thing, okay.
Okay.
From using the
bisphenol A,
yeah,
and phthalates,
yeah,
plastics. Okay. Okay. Also, George, carrying your phone in your pockets, will that cook your sperm?
All right, okay. Intentionally, I've been trying to do that. All right, okay. Well, there are a lot of studies to show that, you know, environmental factors, like, for example, excess amount of hormones used in poultry, in agriculture, might have influence. So we don't know. Pesticides and things like that. Of course, you know, if you can't blame your parents, you blame the environment, right? In reality, right? Okay. But the other thing, it's, you know, occupation. I mean, Mira and I got into a bit of trouble talking about what influenced the sperm count, right? We once talked about occupation. It's like, you know, apparently submarine workers, they actually have lower sperm counts. And then, so when we talked about this on air... Yeah.
But we don't have that problem.
Right, okay.
Mira, because our submarines don't sink. Any other question?
One of my question, actually I have two questions. Okay, initially one of them is whether or not the phone will actually cook your sperm, which I think Dr. Lee said it does. And my second question is that, you know, Michael Jackson, he has this song, Beat It. You know, if men beat it every day, is it going to reduce his sperm count?
Self-indulgence, lah.
There is another word for it.
Well, actually, interestingly, in Netherlands, they actually give out leaflets to say, multiple masturbations actually cleanses, ejaculate old sperms out and actually replenish it with new sperms. And in fact, quite a few studies in Australia also show that. So, you know, it actually shows that multiple ejaculations actually is healthy for the sperm count. So, you know, the old wives' tale, what your father told you, don't do that because otherwise you're going to end up with no children. Well, actually, apparently it's not true. Yeah. You might go blind, though.
Any other question?
Just now you mentioned about normal and the other sperm. What is the other not normal sperm?
Abnormal sperm count.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
I didn't know that there are two kinds of sperm.
Point. Good point. So when we look at sperm under a microscope, what we're trying to do is trying to assess what proportion of that sperm has a function. And a sperm has a definite structure. It looks like a tadpole. It has a head, and it has a midpiece, and it has a tail. The tail makes the sperm swim to find the egg. The midpiece is where the energy supply is from. And the head is where the chromosomes are, where the genetics are. And that's the part that needs to get into the egg. So when we look at sperm, we look at all these three things. And if the sperm is not abnormal, it is in some way defective and therefore will not be functional. and only functional sperm will be allowed to enter the egg. The egg is actually very good. The egg has got a quality control mechanism. It only allows normal sperm to function. So if you have a high sperm count, but your sperm is abnormal, you still will not be able to get that sperm to penetrate the egg. So it's actually a structure. We look at it under the microscope and we say, does it look normal or does it look abnormal? And we compare it against what are standards.
Just like real chicken and headless chickens, right? Okay, so you have the headless ones kind of floating around.
Okay, more questions?
Mira, have you noticed it's all sperm-oriented?
I know, I'm waiting for the ladies.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
You know, they don't...
How worried men are about their sperms.
No, that's because we have no problem going to see a doctor.
Yeah, that's right.
Hello, I'll be representing the ladies now.
No, thank right, you. Okay.
So, is it true that we do have a biological deadline for people who are, let's say, like for me, I do focus on my career, and I know that I'm not ready as for now to have kids, but I would want... in the future. So is it a baseless fear that when you reach certain age, there might be complications in your pregnancy, or there are new research saying that it differs from people to people? So just want to know that. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Well, unfortunately, what they say is actually true. Because for a woman, it's a bit different. When you're born as a little girl, you have already got the eggs in you. And as you go on, you are using all those eggs. So say that you're born with, say, 2 million eggs at birth. By the time you reach puberty, you might be left with, say, 200, 300,000 eggs. And unfortunately, the truth is that once a woman reaches 30, she's probably lost 80% of her eggs. And when she reaches about 40, she's just left with maybe less than 10%. So that's why the old grandmother's tales that, you know, please get married fast because, you know, you want to have your children early. Unfortunately, it does hold true because your eggs are growing older as you are growing older. And how you live your life... if you live an unhealthy life and you smoke, then you are making it even older. Or if you live a stressful life, so how you lead your life, the healthier you lead your life, you are trying to keep those eggs going as well as you can. So going back to what I said earlier, that, you know, if you are planning only later, and I'm guilty. I had my child at 37, okay? So I'm very guilty of waiting till my career was at a point where I could say, now I'm ready. The idea is to be healthy and keep yourself going, go for regular checkups, and when you're ready, you're hopefully really ready and you get pregnant as quickly as you can.
Can you advise what age is ready?
The ready is in her...
Not
in her.
16, right?
Well, definitely not. She's
well, there's a downside to that as well. Teenage pregnancies, Dr. Premita?
Yes, definitely. You don't want teenage pregnancies when you're not ready and you have to cope with a whole lot of things because you probably don't have the support system that you need. You have a lot of babies that are thrown away. So, you know, it's a flip side. You know, you get pregnant, but you're not ready for it. Your interaction with the baby is not right. Your bonding, there's a whole lot of other problems that come in.
When is a man's fertility really determined? Do we know? When you're in
when
womb,
do you start?
When is it before you're born in your mother's womb? When is it determined?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, okay. It is determined when you're in your mother's womb. Your potential to... the gentleman earlier asked about environment. Increasingly, it is looking as though the main reason for the lowered sperm counts is not actually lifestyle but environmental pollution. Because a lot of that data is for 18-year-old boys. And they're not fat. They're going into national service. So it appears as though when boys are in their mother's womb, during those 9 months, something is poisoning the ability of that testicle to produce sperm. And it is looking as though it is exactly what you said. Hormones in the food, plastics in the water, and so on. And they're all highly estrogenic substances. And estrogen is anti-male.
And so, endocrine-disrupting chemicals.
Chemicals, correct. And they actually have been shown to bind to testicular tissue and prevent actually proper functioning of the testis, which is to produce 60-70 million sperm a day. To add to that, One of the chemicals that has been shown to do that is BPA, bisphenol, which you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And because of that, there is now an almost universal worldwide ban on using BPA in
milk bottles.
But can you imagine that there was BPA in milk bottles and we were feeding our children things which are going to affect their fertility in the future for generations?
Well, you'll be happy to know Malaysia has implemented that law. So we don't have BPA in our milk bottles. So that's a really good thing. Any other question?
On the right.
Yes, go ahead.
Why do you think there's a taboo associated with young girls like me when we go to get a pap smear or even visit a gynecologist? And how do we overcome it?
Pranita. Yes.
Why is there a taboo? There shouldn't be a taboo because I'm very against anyone who says that a young girl shouldn't go for a pap smear. I think anyone, however young you are, if you have indulged in sex, should get a gynecological examination. That's one. Number two is that even if you haven't had sex, you should still get a gynecological examination because you don't have to do a pap smear, but we can still talk to you about breast health and uterus and periods. And so, you know what? Every girl should go and see a gynae. And I'm actually happy to see that a lot of mothers and aunties and all that are actually bringing their children, nieces, along just to have a chit-chat. And I always say, you know what, all of you stay outside. I want to have a one-to-one chit-chat with them. And so, believe me, girl, there should not be a taboo. There shouldn't be. So feel free, go and choose whoever you want to go and see and go and have a good chit-chat and have your pap smear done.
I think that's very culturally related, isn't it? That we shouldn't be sexually active. Okay. Now, reality is many women are having sex even before marriage, and hence the taboo.
But yeah, so what's the big deal? I mean, you know, it's a matter of looking after yourself.
Some of them don't want their mothers to know.
Yeah.
So they don't come forward.
And some of the mothers actually do know, and they don't want to know. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I think the point is, if you didn't tell your mother that you're having sex with someone, I don't see why you need to tell your mother you're going to see a gynecologist.
Good point.
Yeah, but then the trick comes when you are diagnosed with an STD or, you know, then what happens from there, Dr. Pramita?
Nothing. If you're diagnosed, you're my patient, I treat you. That's it. You know, I have got no responsibility to tell anyone else around. I mean, it's a private discussion between the doctor and the patient. It stops there.
I think that's a good thing to say.
Very regularly. We're used to, and this is Asia. So as soon as someone finds out that they saw your daughter sitting in Dr. Pramita's clinic, the phone call comes through to Dr. Pramita saying, did you see my daughter? What's wrong with her? Well, we're all used to it. And we normally say, please ask your daughter. First of all, I'm sorry, but I cannot discuss these things with you. So if you feel that you heard that your daughter went to see me, please ask your daughter.
Oh, she had a school project. She had to come and ask me.
So this is what we call it these days, you know?
One last question.
Girls are not getting younger. Normally, you find girls marrying at the age of 36, 38, even 40. So I have a problem where my relative is now like 41 and 2 and having problems with begetting children. She is probably waiting for the egg to swim to the sperm. And the chances are not so great because menopause is coming soon. So can you tell us of any way, I heard there's something like IVF.
IVF.
Is there anybody who can tell us something about it?
Yes, Dr. Prashant is the man.
Not this question. No. I'm afraid the answer is no. What Dr. Pramita said is correct. You are as old as your eggs. The best eggs have been finished in your 30s. So now you've got a 42-year-old egg trying to do what a 32-year-old egg should be doing. So pregnancy rates come down. And there is nothing we can do. We don't know of anything in Western medicine that will increase the quality of the egg. Yes, IVF will increase your pregnancy rate. So according to the chart I showed earlier, if your chances of getting pregnant in any 1 month are, say, 3%, for a 42-year-old person, that number probably goes up to 15 to 20% in 1 month. But remember, IVF is difficult, and we do it on a monthly basis. So in 1 month, if I go up to, say, 15 or 20%, but you're having sex every month for a year, and your chances are 2% a month, you're still far more likely to get pregnant naturally over a year than a single IVF. But to cut it all short, there is no cure for female aging where reproduction is concerned, unfortunately. As Dr. Pramita said, at 42, you're only about 7 or 8 years away from your menopause, and the best eggs are finished.
Okay, I have one last question for you, Dr. Prashant. Research just came out in Britain that most couples with fertility problems will conceive a baby if they keep trying with IVF long enough. And their definition is 2/3 of women will become pregnant after 6 cycles of IVF treatment. That is grueling, Dr. Prashant. When do you stop?
Six cycles?
Yeah. So when do you tell a patient enough is enough?
I think with the person who has had 6 cycles of IVF, the bank manager would be the right person to tell her when to stop. When you go into overdraft. Well, the answer is, I think when you've had enough. IVF does 2 things. It helps you have a baby. But it also is the only time that someone is having a look at how your eggs and sperm behave outside the body. It gives us a lot of information. And there are times when we see things which are bad. Bad eggs, bad embryos, and we tell them before they reach 6 that this really is probably not going to work. And then there's another group for whom things are going to work. But at what point do you stop? There is no answer. I think it's between the husband and the wife and the person treating them. There is no hard and fast rule. Well, I'll tell you a story about when I first started IVF, and I thought I was very clever, and this woman came to see me and did 3 IVFs and didn't get pregnant. So I said to her, look, you know, you've done 3, I think you should think about adoption. This is a long time back. If you said adoption now, they'll have the police on you. But, you know, in the 70s it was allowed, 80s. So she said, thank you very much, and then she went off. And about 2 years later, when I was leaving the UK, she came back to me with a baby in her hand and said, I just came to show you this baby to tell you that you were wrong. Well, thank you very much. And she gave me a present and said, you were the only person who was honest enough to tell me the truth. But I'm someone who doesn't agree with the truth. So I went on, and this baby was delivered after my 16th IVF.
Wow.
What she also said was, which you didn't know, is I am Jewish, and my husband is one of the richest men in the UK. He was. I later found out who he was. And she said, if I didn't have a child, his family would have forced him to take another wife. And I had no other choice. I would have stopped, I would have listened to you, but I had no other choice in life. So thank you very much, and she gave me a beautiful crystal vase, which I still have as a memento. It tells me, you know,
16.
But she had...
Your bank account must be pretty big.
Not me, hers. She had elsewhere. I was just a junior doctor working for someone. The point is that even if we medically think it's time to stop, patients have different thoughts. So it really is between... The lesson there was, it's between the patient, her husband, and obviously his family, and I have to give the advice which I think is right, but in the end, they will do what they think is right.
Okay. We're going to conclude. George, your takeaway.
Oh, well, I take away is that take a holiday, have a lot of sex, right? Okay, I need to find out how much is a lot, and also start having family early in your life, right?
Dr. Pramita.
Well, I think I'd like to end up by saying that infertility shouldn't be a taboo. One shouldn't, in a relationship, one shouldn't say it's your fault or my fault, because you've got into it together, and as a couple should come and see a doctor together. It doesn't have to be an infertility doctor right away. It can be a gynecologist where they can just have a chit-chat, do some timing, and just fine-tune a few things. And they shouldn't feel like they have committed a sin to come and ask for fertility treatment, which is still what's going on today.
Dr. Prashant?
My takeaway is women should be young and men should be like rubber bands.
That's a good
Ladies
way.
Ladies and gentlemen, yeah, Dr. George Lee,
thank you.
Dr. Pramita, and Dr. Prashant.
This is an edited recording of the panel discussion that was held at the BFM Health and Living Live 2016 event on April 2nd. BFM Health and Living Live 2016 is presented by AIA, the real life company.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.